Marvel's Jessica Jones, Episode 7, a.k.a. Top Shelf Perverts, is over. But we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, and I'm joined here by a man whose roommate Robin is also a human lie detector, Kevin Mahadeo.
Yes, she is. She is very much a human lie detector. She knows all my secrets.
Yeah, that's why you are insanely honest, because you really have no choice.
Yeah, none at all. She catches me to lie, and it's just bad scene.
Bad scene. Kevin, how you doing? Good scene right now?
Yeah, doing well. This episode was interesting. I kind of mentioned, you know, before we started recording, I wasn't the hugest fan of this one. I mean, I didn't dislike it, but I don't think it was as... I didn't like it as much as some of the other ones.
Yeah, Kevin said this to me right before we hopped on the air here, that this was not his favorite episode of the season. I wouldn't say it was my favorite episode of the season or anything, but I think that there was some good stuff here, some very good stuff here in many cases, and at least one scene that was kind of a blockbuster. So Kevin, lay it out. Why didn't you love this one? I would guess, my only guess would be it's because you died. Really a bad time for Jessica Jones and Robin's roommates. First you lose a finger, then you lose a head.
It's brutal. That scene was interesting though, because you know, when it started off, as soon as he said that, like, oh, because I love her, like, Robin was next to me, and Robin was just like, death. That was the wrong thing to say. Yeah, Ruben, like,
look, death.
yeah, just brutal. Yeah, he should not have said that.
No, it was a mistake.
Yeah, I would just, you know, we can really delve into it a little bit, you know, but I just, Jessica's plan made zero sense to me.
Uh-huh.
Like, none at all. And, like, half the time I'm like, what exactly is her plan? How does she think this is going to work? And, like, I was like, maybe they haven't said the whole plan yet, and there's going to be some kind of twist. But then, like, stuff happens, and what she expected to happen happens, and she's shocked by that, where it's like, what is Kilgrave doing here? I'm like, this is what you were saying you wanted? Like, there was a lot of, like, I don't know. It felt like maybe Jessica was still intoxicated the entire episode and wasn't quite sure what she was doing.
Okay, well, I mean, in her defense, she does discover Ruben in her bed while she's way hungover.
This is very accurate, yes.
Super hungover. The rest of the episode takes place in that day. So it really is a bad drunken decision. She's probably still intoxicated.
Yeah, just a spiral of bad decisions in this episode.
So, you know, you might want to chalk some of that up to that. But I hear you. I could see that being a complaint. Didn't bother me that much, to be honest. But let's talk it through. Let's see if we can make some sense of this thing.
Right, okay. So it starts off with poor Ruben.
I know, poor Ruben and his banana bread.
Yeah, which again, Kilgrave's creepiness is already there. And, like, when he's in her apartment and using her bathroom, and then poor Ruben brings that banana bread. Just that's also brutal. Another reason to not like Kilgrave.
Yeah.
He does to poor Ruben.
I wonder, you know, he's in the apartment, he's sniffing around the place, he's checking out all her things, looking at all her stuff, he pees in the toilet. That's so gross. It's such a violation. I hope that he at least lifted the seat, but I bet he didn't.
Probably not.
Does not seem like the type of person who lifts the seat when he pees, and I guarantee you he did not put the seat back down. And that's a big...
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly.
That's a big no-no with a lady's apartment. You got to put that seat back down.
Well, I mean, also, I feel like he wouldn't, just because he probably won. Like, if Ruben never showed up, that would be his clue that he was there.
Oh, what a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's not a good guy.
Not a good guy. Bad guy. So he's sneaking around. It's all dark. Ruben shows up. He says, who are you doing? What are you doing in Jessica's apartment with all the lights off? And Kilgrave's answer is, well, the lights are off to suggest that someone isn't here.
Yeah.
Which was good. I thought that was funny. But yeah, the moment that he gets Ruben to explain who he is and why are you here, and he says, it's because I love her. I made her banana bread because I love her. That's not good.
As soon as he said it, I'm like, oh no, Ruben, no.
Yeah, bad sign for Ruben. And that is the last we see of Ruben alive.
Alive.
Alive. Any
we
eulogy,
see him again.
Any eulogy not... for Ruben? Do you have a eulogy for Ruben, Kevin?
Alas, poor Ruben. Robin will miss you.
Robin will miss you, and you're a banana bread. Are you a banana bread fan?
I am a banana bread fan. I don't normally like banana, but I do like banana bread.
Yeah. I like any sort of, like, fruit-baked bread.
Including fruit cake? That's kind of a denser caker thing, but...
I don't know how much fruit cake I've had. I have my wife for Thanksgiving, and her mother made a cranberry orange bread that we still have plenty of, and it's really good.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's great. Snow banana bread.
We had pie for breakfast. We had leftover pecan pie for breakfast.
Oh, I had leftover apple pie for breakfast.
Ah, yeah. Breakfast of champions.
Yeah,
yo.
It's been good. And I'm going to have a slice of the cranberry bread in a little bit.
It's a healthy couple days after Thanksgiving.
Oh, no. It's the worst. It's the worst. It's not good. So that's what's going on at Jessica's apartment. Jessica is having a trashy night herself, literally, as she is thrown into a trash pile because she's too drunk to stay in the bar. Although she insists, you didn't kick me out. I left.
Yeah, totally. Of her own volition. She wanted to be thrown out. Yeah. I mean, maybe she did. She was just sitting there waiting for, you know, Hogarth's ex-wife,
Wendy,
soon
Wendy
to
on
be
on the way out. Yes,
yeah, to like exit her area. So
I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, she's waiting for Wendy to come out of the clinic. She follows Wendy down to the Second Avenue stop in New York City onto the F train platform, and things,
which you're familiar with.
Yeah, I know the subway stop. Things get intense from here. This is no good.
Yeah, this is the start of, I mean, you know, last episode we saw Jessica and she, I remember looking at that and I was like, oh my God, those are like three empty bottles next to her already. So she was pretty deep into the alcohol. And we were already seeing that alcohol causing bad decisions. Because the way she is with Wendy is not great. She threatens her. She almost kills her.
Yeah, very nearly kills her. She gets very rough with her. She roughhouses Wendy. She's like leaning her over the platform. She says, "Do you know what shame feels like? Real shame when you've done something and you've hurt and you've disgusted someone so completely that you can see it in their eyes, the black oozing shit inside you. You sweat it through your skin and you keep sweating until you would do anything not to feel it. Anything. Sign the papers or I'll drop you." And then she actually drops her. Says, "Oh well, I did not mean to do that."
Yeah, accidentally drops her.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting scene too, because you know, after she gets Wendy out of there, I'm like, "Oh, is Jessica gonna try and stop a train? Does she want to get hit by the train?" I think for a moment, I think she contemplates just standing there and getting hit by a train.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Yeah, she's on there and she's staring at the thing, and it seems like a last second jump that she made.
Yeah, I think, you know, when she talks about the shame that she's feeling and the guilt and the horror and the things she's been through, she might, you know, this show has dealt with some hard topics. And I think Jessica contemplated for a moment of just letting the train take her, so to speak.
Yeah, that would have been rough. That would have been a short-lived Jessica Jones.
Yeah, only eight, or what episode are we on? Seven?
Yeah,
seven episodes.
Yeah.
That's it.
So it ends like 2 minutes into episode seven.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was going to happen. But yeah, obviously she's having a hard time. You know, this is shortly after the Luke Cage thing, I assume. It could even be the same night that that she and Luke had their big blowout fight. Maybe, maybe not, but either way, she's reeling from that. And this self-description that she provides for Wendy is clearly stemming from how she's feeling after Luke Cage, the person that she has feelings for, ultimately did declare her a piece of shit.
Yes, very much so. And yeah, that stems right into that shame that she's talking about. And you know what though? Understandable. I mean, she should feel a little ashamed, like I said last time, where I'm like, oh man, the decision she's making is not going to work out well for her, you know, and it didn't.
No, it didn't. So she's hungover. She wakes up in the elevator of her apartment building. She is awoken not by an alarm clock, but by Malcolm in Jazzercise gear.
We've all been there. I mean, if you live in New York, we've been there. Just drunk in an elevator, woken up by someone in Jazzercise gear.
I thought you were going to say we've all been in Jazzercise gear before.
God, no. I've never been. Like, not even anything against Jazzercise, just exercise. Anytime, no, you usually will not see me in that.
I could see you in Jazzercise gear. I could picture it.
You think I could pull it off? That little sweatband on my head, the short shorts and t-shirt?
Oh, I didn't say you could pull it off. I said I could see you wearing it. And I'm not saying I could pull it off. That's not like me coming from like my high tower looking down at you and saying, "No Jazzercise gear."
While in Jazzercise gear is looking down at me and just like, "You do not belong."
Right. No. I mean, that's great image as well. But I don't think either of us belong in Jazzercise gear, but I could see it. I could picture it.
They just see us. You're not, you may look like us, but you are not one of us.
You're not one of us. Yeah. Isn't that what Jack's tattoos say?
Yes, I did that Lost reference for you, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But yeah, we go from Jazzercise to look, death. And it's Reuben. Reuben's dead in the bed and there's blood everywhere and it's awful. And Jessica very quickly just goes into catatonic mode and it's not good. And they quickly piece together that this was a Kilgrave joint.
I mean, yeah, and, like, you know, you really do, you know, despite, like I said, her plan not making sense, you can understand her state of mind here is frazzled and broken. She's already broken, you know, from everything that's happened. She feels just terrible about herself, and then she comes home, and someone that, you know, that she knows personally upstairs is in her bed, dead, with his throat slit, meaning not only, again, for sure Kilgrave was in her apartment, but also this poor guy, you know, fell prey to Kilgraving.
Yeah, he got Kilgraved.
He got Kilgrave hard.
He got killed grave.
Yeah. Oh, God, get out of here.
I can't. I'm here forever.
But yeah, making someone slit their own throat. Jeez, like that. Oh, God. Poor Reuben. I feel so bad for poor Reuben. Not because I am him. Mainly because I am him. But also, poor Reuben.
And I think the sad part, too, is when we check in with Robin throughout the episode and toward the end of the episode, she talks about how he's very sensitive about his neck. That makes you feel so much worse about it.
It really does. And, like, just the way she talks about him, like, you know, it's really sad. And, you know, they're clearly very close. We joked about that, you know, their questionable relationship before, but it really is, it's just upsetting. They're very close, you know, they're brother and sister, they're twins, and this poor guy, you know, it's gone now, and she probably will never know what happened to him.
Yeah. Well, who knows? You think that they're just not going to go back to the Robin storyline at all?
I mean, I can't imagine that Jessica, I mean, maybe she learned a lesson about telling people things, but, like, that's a rough one. Like, you know, how do you bring that up? Like, his body is not going to be recovered, and what are you going to do, show the head now? Like, it's just, there's too much complication there, I think, that I feel like poor Robin will never know what happened.
So Jessica immediately tells Malcolm. Malcolm is trying to call the police, and Jessica says, you can't. It's the third death I'm directly connected to. They'll arrest me. So they stop for a second to figure out where they are. But then she decides that she's going to end this. There's one more option. She has an option, and it does involve going to jail, but it has to be the right jail, she says. So break down what Jessica's plan is for me. If you can do it without emotional attachment, if you can objectively tell me what Jessica's plan is, I think that'd be great.
Right. So that's what, you know, for a long time I've been trying to think about this. So it seems that her plan is to go to a supermax prison, which is obviously very high in security, have her in solitude, and she knows that Kilgrave will come and get her, drawing him out into the open, so that way they'll know where he'll be. Like, I feel like that's what her plan was.
I think that's part of her plan. I think the plan is she's going to go deep into supermax prison, which is going to require like 7 layers of hell to get through in order to get her out of there, requiring Kilgrave basically to show up in person. Like, it's not like he can just whisper in, he can't just like Kilgrave one person. He has to Kilgrave multiple people. And in order to Kilgrave multiple people, she thinks that he's going to have to show up in person, show up on security camera feeds, and be caught red-handed doing what he's doing. And there will be evidence of Kilgrave, not just that he will be there in person, but evidence of Kilgrave. And then maybe she would kill him there. That sounds like that would be fun. That would be cool to knock him in the face and end it all. And at least he's caught on camera, and maybe that exonerates Hope and anybody else who's been Kilgraved. I think that that's kind of where her head is at.
I guess. It's just one of those plans that make very little sense because, one, I mean, we as viewers know, but and so as viewers, we know how his power is already. We saw him control the entire restaurant, just be quiet, you know, and at the end of this episode, we definitely see how powerful he is.
Yep.
But, like, even if you're Jessica and you're not sure how powerful he is, that's another reason this plan is bananas, because you don't know how powerful he is, so you're making a lot of assumptions about what he can and can't do. She doesn't really know him personally. She doesn't really know what his personality is enough, and she's not, like, you know, she's not like a police psychologist to know, like, this is what this criminal type is, and this is how he'll react, and this is what he'll do. So it's her making a lot of assumptions about him and what his powers are, and none of it is going to be, none of the plan ends up good for her. If she's wrong about any part of him, she's screwed. She's in prison forever, the end. Like, so it's just a very, like, flimsy, nonsensical plan that maybe stems from the fact that she's brutally hungover and she's mentally broken. And sure, I guess I can get that. But like then later on in the episode, when what she is was hoping was going to happen, him coming out in the open happens, she's completely shocked. Which I'm like, but you, this is what you thought was going to happen.
Right.
But again, we can get to that when it happens.
Sure. But let's stop down here for a second, because the plan is introduced here. She wants to get into Supermax prison. She's going to put the pieces in play for that to happen throughout this episode. Although really all it's going to involve is the severed head, and she just, you know, she's tying up loose ends throughout the rest of the day. But how much do we want to penalize the show for this versus how much we want to penalize Jessica for this? Because if we're penalizing Jessica for this, I don't think that that necessarily means that we have to penalize the show. Obviously, it's not a great plan. Not a fantastic plan. There's a lot of variables in play. Who's to say that Kilgrave couldn't just Kilgrave a ton of people that are involved with the Supermax that she gets sent to, and he would be completely blameless. He would be completely without any sort of evidence against him in this thing. Who's to say that that couldn't happen? So just on that level, the plan is not fantastic, but pretty much everybody in the episode is telling Jessica, your plan sucks. Everyone is saying this, from Trish to Malcolm, your plan is terrible. This is not a good plan. You shouldn't be doing it. And she's the one who's insisting. She's hungover. She's highly, highly, highly emotional. She just found her neighbor's dead body in her bed after a long night of drinking, potentially the morning after she basically got eternally broken up with from the unbreakable Luke Schmidt. There's a lot of bad things going on in Jessica's life. This is just the latest body that is attributed to her due to her relationship with Kilgrave. So clearly she's not thinking clearly. Clearly she's thinking poorly. She's, you know, she doesn't have a good plan in place. That's obviously bad on Jessica, but is that bad with the show? Do you think that that's inconsistent with what the show has shown us so far? Is this bad on the show, or is it just bad on Jessica?
I think you're right in the sense of, like, I think the show succeeded in, you know, a lot of other times when you hear plans that are this bad, it somehow magically works out for the hero. In this case, it definitely doesn't. So that is definitely more on the positivity of the show, to be like, we're going to do this kind of tropey thing, but have it not work out. But I feel like also because the entire episode, like, that's, you know, like 60 minutes of this stuff is kind of like just sitting there like, this is not going to work. And like, the fact it didn't work was great, because I was glad, because it's like, well, that would have been bananas if it did. But if they had ended it and then been like 60 minutes and then it did work, I'd be like, oh, this is terrible.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it was smart of them to do it. It's just, it's hard to sit for 60 minutes being like, Jessica, what are you doing?
Right.
Jessica, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, but no, I think you're right. I think the show was smart in how it tackled Jessica's terrible plan, because the show knew this is supposed to be a terrible plan.
And I think that's why I like the episode. I don't love what Jessica had up her sleeve, because clearly it wasn't a good plan and it gets busted, but I don't think that that's bad on the episode. I think that the episode, and I think that the series overall, has done enough to convince us that a lot of the time Jessica gets it wrong. Emotionally, she gets it wrong almost all of the time. And when she's acting emotionally and when she's acting impulsively, it can go very, very wrong, as we see in this episode. It could have gone worse, frankly. So I think that that's consistent with the character. I think it's consistent with somebody who really punches first, asks questions later. I think that this works for Jessica as a character, and I don't think that the show is being too wobbly by having Jessica come up with sort of this plan of desperation that we can pretty easily tell pretty quickly isn't going to work. And I think that that's parroted back by the fact that everybody in her inner circle that finds out about the plan is like, Jessica, no, that's not going to work. This is not a good idea.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it definitely works in favor of the show, and it works in favor of how Jessica acts. The punch first, ask questions later is very much, we talked about it last episode, that seems to be how she acts as a person. And so that definitely fits in with all of this. It's just, again, like, I have no argument against what you're saying. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and like you said, it's a positive thing in the show and how they handled it. It's just the plan is so bad that I'm like, oh, man. There's no way, and 60 minutes of a plan so terrible. Now, if it was like a risky plan that people were like, this is way too risky, don't do it, I think I might have been a little bit okay with it.
Right.
Not okay with it, but like been like, okay, I get it, but it's a risk, and so sure. But this was just like, you know, nuts to bolts, this is a terrible plan. Like, and for 60 minutes, you have to hear people say this is really bad and just have no justification on why this is a plan that should be enacted.
Right. I get that.
And then she rips off poor Ruben's head. So there's that, too.
I know, that's a little far. But I do think that maybe there's something to, you know, to your point, which is just like, that's not a pleasurable experience of watching your main character just have this obviously awful plan and you have to be on board with her. I think that they pay it off. I think they pay it off in a really big way.
Yes, yes, they do. The ending is phenomenal.
But I can understand that the process of watching her go through that can kind of be like, don't do that, Jessica. This isn't fun.
Yeah, I think this really is just like an off moment for her because of everything that's happened. Because like, she really does a lot of stuff where I'm just like, okay, come on, you're not this dumb.
Right.
And like, so there was a lot of moments. I feel like it was just the hangover and the alcohol and the mental stress. And there's a lot of stuff going on. So I can attribute to a lot of her like weird actions and you know, kind of broken mental state to that.
Right. How about Trish's plan? We cut to Trish's apartment. She and Simpson, they still got it hot and heavy. Look, sex. They're having super awesome sex, apparently. Intense sex, as he says. She is the dominant. She is the Christian.
She's a Hellcat in bed.
She's the Christian Grey to his Anastasia Steele, it seems like.
Get out of here. How dare you? I'll give you loss, but how dare you?
I'm staying. I'm not leaving. I'm staying right where I am. And then she has this plan, apparently. She's dodging Jessica's calls because we are going to find out that she doesn't want to field any calls from Jessica until she has a crystallized plan to deliver to her. But that doesn't mean she isn't working on finding Kilgrave. She has tracked down the security team that Kilgrave has hired. And Simpson doesn't seem to love it because this is a dangerous plan and he doesn't like that Trish is getting too close to the danger again.
Right. What's interesting about this episode, too, is that I feel like a lot of people, well, first of all, everyone has some sort of different plan. Like, as we see, Abe Simpson's plan, I guess, is different from Trisha's, which is different from Jessica's, which is different from anyone. But like, at the same time, like with Trisha's plan, I'm not against it. But I do feel like, hey, Trish, you should realize if you dodge like one of your best friend's calls and don't answer, that makes them suspicious and concerned. You pick up the phone, you fake it. You're an actress. Like, fake it.
Yeah,
fake,
you're a Teen Choice Award-winning actress.
Yeah. A questionable, you know, award and how she received it. But still, like, I feel like when you act that, when you don't answer the calls, it's just going to make that person more, like, you know, worried. So I feel like she should have faked talking to Jessica, at least, and that everything's fine while trying to put this plan together.
Right.
Because, like, the longer she waits, the more Jessica's going to get frazzled and more suspicious. So Trish's plan, I think, is fine. It's just like that one feature, I'm like, that seems like a misstep on your part.
Right.
And Abe Simpson's plan, we're not exactly too sure of. We know, you know, later on, he definitely is like, she's like, oh, I don't know where he is. And he's like, just looking at him.
Right.
And so, I mean, my guess is his plan is just like, I'm just not going to tell Trish and I'm going to murder him.
Yeah, I think that's it. Because they do have this sort of philosophical debate in this scene as they're eating udon noodle salad, which it didn't look like udon noodles. That looked like a vermicelli to me.
Yeah, like, no, udon noodles are much thicker than that.
Thick noodles. These look like little angel hair pastas.
Yeah, they're more like, they're not the right color, but they're definitely like more like ramen, but they could have been like soba noodles, but they're the wrong color to be soba noodles.
Let's spend the next 20 minutes debating the noodles that Trish had in her fridge. But no, they're talking over noodles. They're noodling the idea around after they were canoodling in bed. Let me just say noodle one more time. And they're talking about like what to do with Kilgrave when we get him. And she's kind of talking about, well, it's not up to us. We don't get to decide whether or not to kill him. And Simpson says that some people need to be removed from this earth and Kilgrave is one of them. So he knows where she stands. She knows where he stands. She thinks that she's probably got a lot more say in the matter than she truly does, given the fact that their relationship right now seems to be she's calling the shots, which is awesome. But Simpson is going to be the guy who's following the team based on her orders, and he's going to be the guy who has the decision to make of, do I let Trish in on this, or do I just take care of this myself? And since we know what he says, some people need to be removed from this earth, and Kilgrave is one of them, it feels like a fair assumption that he would be coming after Kilgrave to take him off the planet, to throw him into outer orbit. Probably not literally, though maybe.
He's actually Superman. This is a crossover we never saw coming.
He's Nuclear Man.
Oh, no. Why would you reference Superman 4?
Which is worse, that or 50 Shades?
oh, what are you doing to me right now?
Your brain, it's leaking through your ears. I can see it. But yeah, so he's that seems to be what he is up to, unless he's still Kilgraved, which I guess is not out of the realm of possibility. But the way that he's talking to Trish and the way he's looking at these people, if he was still Kilgraved, why wouldn't he just get out of the car and be like, yo, Kilgraved, sup?
Yeah, what's up, bro? Exactly.
What's up, Kilbro?
I feel pretty confident he's not Kilgraved. I was very questioning of Abe Simpson for a while, but I feel like he has not been Kilgraved anymore.
Not right now. But I mean, depending on how this episode ends on a pretty cool cliffhanger where Kilgrave and Jessica are at the house and Simpson is outside and he watches Jessica go in. So depending on Simpson's next move, he could get into that house and be with Kilgrave and Jessica. And if he's caught, he could easily get Kilgraved again.
That's true.
To the point that I would be surprised if that's not where we're going.
Yeah, definitely a possibility for him. I'm curious because we had this discussion in Daredevil. We touched on a little bit here. Robin and I have discussed it, and it's basically the hero killing thing, right? You said before when they had him in the van, you would have been tempted to just take him out. Robin actually said the same thing: take him out. Like, they get what they're saying about justice, but he is a person who probably needs to be taken out. So is that where you still stand? Like, Kilgrave is a character. Like, you got to kill that guy. You got to kill Grave. You got to kill Kilgrave into the grave or something.
Right, into the killing grave. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know. I think what I said was I would be tempted. I'd be super tempted. It would be hard not to do it. But, you know, there also is like, if we kill him, how do we prove Hope is innocent? How do we prove all of these things that Kilgrave is involved in? And then the other piece of that, though, is Kilgrave's just too dangerous. You know, his power is that he can just manipulate anybody he talks to. So that's difficult. I don't know how you what do? You muzzle him? You put a muzzle on him? Maybe that's the plan. Maybe you just got to like super strength his mouth shut and force a muzzle onto him. That could be good. So I don't know. I don't know if you just got to straight up kill him. I think that you got to get some confessions out of him, but I don't know how you get those confessions out of him. He's a tough nut to crack.
It is.
It's a difficult situation to resolve.
Yeah, you know, but I definitely kind of, you know, it's tough because you when you read comics and stuff and, you know, where you stand, and I still do stand that I don't think heroes should necessarily kill people. It should only be the last resort. But it is tough, like you said, with Kilgrave, just because he has that power set. And it's like, well, what do you do about that guy? How do you contain a guy like
that?
You
got to break his jaw. You got to make it so he can't talk to you.
Break his jaw, then wire it shut.
Yeah, wire it shut. Take his tongue out. Do something awful like that.
Oh, God.
I know. I know how you feel about losing appendages, right?
Yes.
But I feel like you got to do something. You got to just like make sure he's not speaking anymore.
Right.
And that, you know, that's as good as killing him because his power is gone at that point. But I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to figure this out. I have to assume that they're going to figure this out. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty unsatisfying.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird ending.
It'll be a weird ending if they don't solve it somehow. Binging Billy laughing at us right now because Kilgrave kills everybody.
Yeah, it ends with Kilgrave. Just they're like, ha, 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 ha. Either that or everyone just sitting around and be like, so what do we do? The end.
The end. Yeah, no more. So who knows? Who knows how that's going to get resolved? But I think that Simpson clearly has his answer. He thinks Kilgrave needs to be killed. And I feel like Simpson, if he makes that move, he's just going to get Kilgrave very quickly. So I feel like that's where that's going for sure. So what's next? We got Jessica goes to the courthouse, has a little bit of a scene with Hogarth, finds out how to get into Supermax by nightfall. It only houses the worst criminals, top shelf perverts. That's how we get the name of the episode. Did you think top shelf pervert was the best name of this episode? Was that the best available name based on all of the lines of dialogue we get in this thing? Was that the one, top shelf perverts? Do you think that it's summed up the message of the episode enough?
I think it summed up the message of the episode because I think at the end Kilgrave has solidified himself as that.
He is a top.
I mean,
pervert.
Yeah, he is that. He is. They talk about the people who belong in that type of prison are the worst of the worst. Like, and they mentioned top shelf perverts. It's the name of the episode. And at the end of this episode, we definitely have established that is Kilgrave without a question. You know, without a shadow of a doubt, that is him.
We keep saying, we keep saying Top Shelf Pervert, and I keep thinking Top Chef Pervert, and I don't want to watch that show.
I do not want to watch that show. It's funny because, like, when Hogarth tells her that, like, Top Shelf Perverts thing, and then they, you know, later on she goes to the, like, child actors, and I had no idea why, and I was like, oh God, what's she doing? Why? I was very concerned.
Yeah. Incidentally, Top Chef returns tomorrow night.
Does it now?
Yeah, it comes back December 2nd. This podcast is dropping on December 1st.
Well then, everyone get ready for some Top Chef perverts. See how that plays out.
That'd be bad. Oh, that'd be a really bad season. I don't want to see what they're cooking up there. But yeah, I think that that's a good explanation. I mean, that was something that was sticking in my head of like, why is this episode called Top Shelf Perverts? Just because that's a great name for an episode. But the Kilgrave answer is good. I like that. I like what Hogarth says next. She says that Supermax is a living hell with real demons, and it's the last place you want to end up. I thought that AKA a living hell could have been good.
I think AKA Living Hell would have been good, but I think it is pretty fitting for the episode. Like, Jessica is in a living hell right now, so I think either of those could have probably gone. I kind of like Top Shelf Perverts just because of the Kilgrave connection.
Instead, it's Top Chef Perverts. All right, so let's move on from Top Chef Perverts. Let's go to Malcolm, who has no idea what to do with Ruben's body right now because he doesn't agree with Jessica's plan. He wants to save Jessica from herself. He wants to save the sandwich if he can. and Malcolm has a run-in with Robin. This is where Robin says, I'm a human lie detector. I can always tell when someone's lying. It's kind of like a weird tonal scene. Like, in terms of where it fits in this episode, where we know that Robin's brother is dead, we don't know what Robin and Ruben's relationship was really like. Obviously, she was very protective of him. Was it more than that? Was it a little Lannister-esque? I'm not sure. Who knows? But it was just a little strange, and she's kind of like saying all these goofy, weird things like, good job, Q-Tip. And I think, my brother was in love with Jessica and was drawing their initials with a big heart around them in his Etch-a-Sketch. So it's like kind
of... Wish he had an Etch-a-Sketch, aw.
I know. It makes me like Ruben more. But it's just sort of this weird scene tonally in this episode that's otherwise, you know, dealing with a really intense situation. I don't know. I guess my point is I like your Robin, Kevin. I don't know that I love this Robin.
Well, yeah, she's a bit weird. My Robin's great.
Your Robin's fantastic.
Not like this Robin at all. but yeah, I think I agree with you in that it's a weird scene. I think that scene was more for the audience than it was for the story, so to speak. Because like for the audience, it gives us a little bit more on like what Ruben was like and, you know, what their relationship was like and seeing the trauma and heartache on her part. So I think that scene was really more for the audience, which is probably why it felt so weird and kind of off tonally.
It was just a little strange. I thought it was weird. Like with Malcolm being like, Jessica's not a bad person. You should know that. And then Robin's just like, she's a harpy.
What say you, queen of the harpies?
Yeah, queen of the harpies. Yeah. So does that make Malcolm a son of the harpy?
Yeah, for sure.
A disciple? Because he's under the spell?
I just feel like, I don't know, man. It's tough because you need scenes like this because you have to do the Malcolm thing to have him be like, I want to save Jessica, but then you need the Robin reaction, but then you have Robin confront Jessica later. So I get it. It's an off scene for sure. Yeah. But like I said, we learned that Ruben had an Etch-a-Sketch, so worth it.
So that's great. Another way you can relate to this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not as skilled as an Etch-a-Sketch as him because, like, I can't draw hearts on there, but I try. They just come out real wonky looking.
All right. Well, we've got a few days to try and by the finale, if you could if you could get that on lockdown, that would be great. So we get a scene where Jessica goes to Luke Cage's bar, and as she was walking through the door, I was like, oh, wow, we're going to get back to Luke this fast? I'm pretty surprised by that. I figured we'd have a few episodes off from Luke, and we do, it turns out. He's not at the bar. Who knows where the hell he is? He's taking a few days off. If anyone has earned some vacation time, I think Luke is on the list. I think Jessica's probably earned some vacation time as well. Really, actually, everybody on the show so far has really earned a break other than Kilgrave.
Yeah, I'm going to say other than Kilgrave. Yeah, sure.
But, you know, the unbreakable Luke Schmidt deserves a break.
Yeah, for sure, Z's. I mean, he's went through some rough stuff recently, to say the least. Got learned some knowledge, so he probably needs to take a little bit, you know, break from it all, so to speak, as you put it. I am super curious what his vacation is, though. Obviously, part of me just wants him and Danny Rand just chilling somewhere, hanging out, being buds.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he's actually doing.
He's just hanging out, celebrating a sweet Christmas somewhere.
Yeah, God, jeez, that'd be so great. We're having a sweet Christmas holiday. Yeah. It's just him and Danny having like an unbirthday party, except it's a un-Christmas party. Just sitting around drinking spiked eggnogs together. That sounds delightful.
That sounds good. I like it.
Yeah.
This is a sour Christmas, is when Wendy comes to Hogarth's office and you think that she's coming to deliver the divorce papers, but nope, it's not. It's blackmail.
Well, Hogarth was always just like, I want to know Wendy's secrets. And apparently Hogarth was dumb enough not to keep her own secrets on lockdown, because that's a pretty big secret.
Yeah, she bribed a juror back in the day, and all of the evidence is on her old AOL account. Kudos to Wendy for remembering the password to the AOL account.
Yeah, shame on them for having the old AOL account.
Yeah, that should be gone by now, you would think.
Yeah, I'm very, like, yeah, no, I think... Even, like, I don't know, maybe Hogarth's, well, 20 years ago still feels, like, way too soon for AOL.
Look, no disrespect intended to anyone listening to this who still has their AOL account. I know that there are a few people out there, but seriously, why?
Yeah, right? Like, how
there's
are you...
There's Gmail, there's Yahoo, there's...
Or Ymail, as they call themselves now.
Oh, is that what they call it now?
I discovered that. My sister was just like, oh, this is my email address, and she's like, at Ymail, and I'm like, at Ymail? She's like, yeah, that's Yahoo. I'm like, what the what?
Yeah, they're just copying the Gmes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
the Googs is where it's at. Everybody needs a Googs.
I like the Googs. I mean, there's options is the point. Like, AOL, does AOL have archiving?
I don't know, right? Like, I mean, like, archiving is a recent thing. Like, yeah. I feel like old AOL doesn't.
Again, I'm just surprised that she knows the password, because I would assume it's the old AOL account. So I bet Hogarth is like, what was the password to that again? And Wendy's like, it was I Love Wendy.
Yeah.
You forgot.
How do you not remember that? It was our anniversary.
It's the name of the restaurant, you jerk. So she's saying 75% of your assets, or else you lose everything. Because I will go ahead and I will show everybody this blackmail. And I'm doing this because you sent your super freak to super freak me out. And it worked, but instead I'm just going to super blackmail you now.
Yeah, it worked. It worked, but not in the way you were hoping.
All right. And Pam, you know, Pam's kind of ride or die with Hogarth and says, I already knew about this. You know, it's none of this is a secret to me. And then
I wish that Wendy was just like, no, you did not.
Yeah, and then Pam would be like, yeah, you're right. I didn't know it. I'm sorry. But Pam has a great line after Wendy leaves, because she didn't know the secret. And she says, it's difficult to defend you when she knows more of your secrets than I do. But I mean, it's kind of crazy that Pam hears something like that, didn't know it. And her reaction is to be like more like disappointed than furious, like raging mad about something like this. She's just like, you know, it's hard to defend you when she knows more of your secrets than I do, rather than being like, you bribed a juror? What else have you done, you freak? Tell me everything before I freaking marry you.
I feel like the lesson is just no one should know your secrets. Not a single person should know your secrets. People need to keep their secrets on lockdown.
I think that the lesson here is Hogarth has way too many skeletons in the closet. Maybe you should cut bait on this one.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's got skeletons, and she's also got, like, you know, leftover, like, abortion stuff. I don't know who knows. Yeah, like Hogarth's got some weird stuff going on all around.
Yeah, no forward momentum on that storyline in this episode, but I'm sure it's got to be coming up soon.
Yeah.
All right, we go to Stars and Tykes talent agency, and Kevin, can I hear you read the line? Do you have the line in front of you?
I do not. Which line?
I love Zarkola because it tastes great.
Yeah, that the line the kids were reading. Okay.
Yeah. You don't have a line read on that? You can't teach me?
It tastes great.
It tastes great.
There reminds me of that entire scene reminded me of a Family Guy episode where they had, like, Brian was going in to do the reading for the follow your nose bit. And it's just, like, you know, the Sammy the Toucan, whatever his name is, just there. And
Toucan
just doing,
Sam is his
name. Yeah, Toucan Sam.
Sammy Toucan is another guy.
Doing different readings, like, follow your nose. Follow your nose. Like, just over and over, different emphasis. It just reminded me of that so much.
Yeah. So the call goes to Brittany Kovac, but unfortunately for Brittany Kovac, Jesse is there. Jesse Jones is in the picture, and so she is getting the call ahead of Brittany Kovac, who is upset. But that's show business.
Sorry. That's how show business works.
Yeah, sorry, Brittany.
Get used to it, kid.
Take a seat, kid, said Binging Billy. And yeah, we get to meet Trish Walker's mom, and yeah, we can tell that she's kind of horrible. Played by Rebecca DeMille. Mornay, who's a fantastic actress. Cool to see her on the show here. She is Trish's mom, was obviously involved in the whole It's Patsy thing.
Saw the poster on the wall.
Yeah, we saw the poster on the wall. So she's been cut out of the deal for at least 3 years. She says, I haven't seen my kid in 3 years, aside from like the random street encounters and the super drunk voicemails that we've gotten. But she seems like bad business. She's the one who raised Jessica Jones after Jessica Jones' parents were killed. And she's just, you know, kind of awful. She seems terrible.
She has that line where she's like, I should have never taken you in. And it's just like good God. Yeah. Like, just every part of her did not seem great. And we know what she did to Trish as a kid. So just, ooh, yeah, not a great person.
Yeah.
This scene, I mean, I guess it's because Jessica wanted to tie up loose ends and do one last thing to make sure Trish is safe and feels good before she goes to Supermax. So I guess that's her reasoning for going here and, like, confronting her.
I guess.
That's a question.
Yeah, no, I think so. That seems as good to me. I mean, she says earlier on, I've got loose ends to tie up.
Yeah.
So she's assuming that her really, really terrible plan, which, by the way, even she admits is a terrible plan. She's assuming that her horrible plan could very likely end in her in Supermax forevs. So she may as well, you know, just put the fear of Thunder God into Trish's mom here. So
she could have made the 99 friends speech.
Yeah, she didn't. That's a good speech. She should really be using that more.
Right? Yeah. Like not a lot of people are going to call that bluff. So you might as well use it.
Well, we have Dorothy Walker is on the show now. At this point, how often do you think we'll see her? We'll see her again, would you say, or was this a one off?
That is a good question.
I gotta imagine that you don't cast Rebecca De Mornay as Trish Walker's mom unless you plan to use her a little bit more.
I feel like we might. I feel like having Jessica go in and do that was like a good moment to show Jessica watching out for a friend. But I feel like also we might need Trish herself to confront her mom just to have Trish's story arc.
Right.
Yeah. So that would be my guess.
Yeah, and we also get a little bit of her at the end of the episode when Jessica's kind of seeing the flashback play out in front of her.
Right, of her weird past life, I guess.
Right. Speaking of Trish, Trish goes to Alias Investigations. She promises Malcolm she will not scream no matter how really, really bad the thing behind the door is. And of course she screams because it is really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I don't understand why Malcolm, like, okay, whatever you do, don't scream. Yeah, but, there's a dead body, a brutally dead body, blood everywhere. Why would she not?
Yeah, there's a better way of doing that. Trish, I called you over here because I have to show you something and it's really awful. And that awful thing is, you know, that guy from upstairs, Kilgrave made that guy upstairs kill him, and his dead body is behind this door, and I'm going to show it to you.
Yeah, so when you see it, you know what you're going to see, so please don't scream.
Yeah, I feel like
that is what he should have said.
Like, be more specific than it's really, really bad. Not only, like, it wasn't just the scream, she pulls her gun out and points it at him.
Well, she thinks he's a murderer.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair for her to do that. That was the right choice. I'm surprised she didn't pull the trigger. But it's just bad.
Bastardly, I guess. Just like, maybe he's not. Why is it in Jessica's apartment? There's a lot of questions.
But, you know, if I want us to go easy on Jessica because she's hungover, I feel like I shouldn't be so hard on Malcolm because he is recovering from heroin addiction.
That is true, yes.
So in his defense, he's going through a thing himself.
He could also just be bad at explaining things. We've all been there with people who are just terrible explaining things. Yeah. So he probably, you know, is not very good at explaining situations.
Yeah.
He just gave a, like, this is really bad, not realizing that really bad could mean literally anything.
Could mean anything. But yeah, so Trish is going to stick behind. She's going to clean up the mess while Malcolm drags the body to, I think it was the East River, either the East River or the Hudson. I couldn't tell.
Hudson probably is full of, it's just full of them already,
yeah, it's
right?
Full of bodies. I think the East River is where they used to dump the bodies. I don't know anymore. I don't have the inside.
Next question, how did Jessica find the right ones?
Right. I don't have the inside line on that. But Malcolm is going to take the body and Trish is going to clean up all the blood, and Jessica and Trish are talking about how it's a really bad, terrible plan, a complete long shot, but it's the only plan she's got. And, you know, eventually Trish is just kind of like, all right, you're going to do what you're going to do. So that's what's going to happen. And Jessica is going to fish Reuben out of the river just to get the head off.
Yeah, which we you know, I just joked about the East River thing, but now I'm like, how many times do you think she went down and up pulling up different heads? Like, nope, this isn't him.
Wrong head. Got the wrong head. Do you think that she just went down there and just tore the head off rather than bring up the whole body?
Oh, God, good question.
Yeah.
Like, she'd have to, yeah, bring it up, tear the head off, throw the body back. Oh, my God, poor Reuben. This poor guy.
It's really poor terrible. Guy. Yeah, I mean, even in death, he couldn't catch a break.
Yeah, no, just, oh, jeez. But, yeah, man, super strength. Like, you know, she definitely tore the head off. It wasn't like she cut it off. Like, just from what we see, like, that's a rip.
Yeah. It was a real feat of strength, and
she sub-zeroed him.
She sub-zeroed him. Is that Sub-Zero's move? He rips off the head?
Yeah, with the spinal cord attached in the old Mortal Kombat. That was his, like, fatality.
That wasn't a Scorpion move?
No, Scorpion pulled off his face and set you on fire. Oh, or ripped out your heart, depending on which one you did.
That's right. Spoiler alert if you guys haven't unlocked the fatalities from Mortal Kombat.
In Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah, maybe still be working on that. But yeah, you know, feats of strength. She rips off the head. She brings the head to Lester Freeman, a.k.a. Oscar.
Yeah, Cronin. Which I was excited.
Yeah, great to have him back in the mix. She comes to him. He's the detective that she wants to see at 8 p.m. He obviously appropriately freaks out. I love how he jumps up and just, like, his first reaction is like go for his gun in his his shoulder holster. He doesn't even take it out, but that's just like a great natural startled cop reaction.
He is natural police.
He really is. He's great police. But yeah, she shows him everything that she can do once she's, you know, in the interrogation room and she's fired Hogarth. Why did she fire Hogarth? Because Hogarth is like, this woman's insane. She doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah, because Hogarth is there to try and stop the plan from happening, and right. Jessica does not want that happening.
Yeah.
But man, when Jessica folds up that chair, that was amazing. that was pretty badass.
It was great. She like crumples up the chair. She lifts up the desk, and Lester Freeman's like, "Oh snap, that's crazy."
Yeah. What am I doing in this room with this person?
I did like this from Jessica, and I think that this also helps to explain why her plan was so horrible and she was okay with it, because I think the worst case for her was I could just rest. I could be locked away in Supermax. No one would come for me. I'd be locked away from all these people that I would be damaging, and I would just get a break. And I think that she sees that as, you know, for somebody who was at one point seconds away from letting herself get smashed by a train, this doesn't seem like such a bad alternative to just be locked away forever, no one bothering her, and her unable to bother anybody else.
I guess, but she might feel differently once she's sober.
Yeah, that's also true.
Like, oh, this was a mistake.
It's a mistake. I made a huge mistake. So we get this crazy scene. We get this crazy scene where the entire precinct is under Kilgrave control. Everybody's got a gun on each other, pretty much. Kilgrave walks in, and he makes his big declaration of love. We haven't talked about this, but earlier in the episode, we do get confirmation that Kilgrave is basically just turning Jessica's house into exactly as she remembered it. Or at least that's
he's a psychopath.
That's the insinuation, at the very least, you know, with the Mickey Mouse statue.
Yeah.
So that seems to be something from her childhood or close enough to her childhood. So he's redecorating everything for her. And that is, it seems to be his gesture of love. He says, I love you. I'm not torturing you. I love you. And she says, well, that's a pretty demented declaration of love. But what I thought was interesting is that this had never really crossed Jessica's mind before. That it wasn't just, I'm torturing you out of revenge. But it's, no, I genuinely feel like I'm in love with you. Which we can call into question and ought to call into question on a number of levels. That this is not love. This is obsession and psychotic behavior. But in his mind, it's not obsession. In his mind, it's not torture that he's trying to do. In his mind, he wants her to love him out of free will because he believes it's an inevitability.
Yeah, which I think, you know, touches on some stuff we were talking about before, too, you know, about his motivations. It does seem that that's exactly his plan, is that he's going to convince her to love him of his own free will and through his actions and not by mental force, I guess.
Yeah.
What is even more bananas is that we kind of talked about this last episode where I kind of said, like, you know, he's a stalker and they kind of draw from this real life stuff. And I'm going to amend that statement because this is how I think clever this show is because when Kilgrave does this whole thing and he gives this speech, he's not a stalker. He is that guy. He is that, like, I feel like hitting that, like, obviously an exaggerated thing, but the I'm a nice guy. Look how much stuff I do for you.
Right.
Like, you should love me. I will convince you to love. Like, he's that. And, it, you know, poor Jessica is suffering through this. And I think this show does a good job of, like, addressing that type of personality. Again, there's an element of, like, an exaggerated realism to Kilgrave, but he is that guy that people kind, you know, like that women experience, that women have around sometimes, and it's tough and it's terrifying and it's horrifying. And this kind of shows that to, you know, an X degree. But I think that's really what makes Kilgrave so scary at times, is because he's that person that you could know, that person that some women, many women probably have to go through and deal with.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, it's just not great.
It's awful. It's awful. But it's a really great scene. You know, just the visual of all of these people with guns on each other, frozen in place, unable to speak. You could just imagine what Kilgrave said to them to get them to that place. We talked about this in the last recap. We talked about how we have seen him at the poker table, and we saw him in the restaurant. We've seen him exert control over a massive amount of people, and we speculated that it could be really dangerous down the line. And now it's immediately revealing itself just how bad it could be, because Kilgrave could have just as easily, you know, rather than tell these people, you're going to think that this is a hilarious joke in 30 seconds.
Shoot yourselves.
He could have easily said, all right, now everybody shoot each other. You know, he very easily could have done that.
Yeah, and I also think that this definitely solidifies how bad Jessica's plan was going to be,
right?
Because he easily could have just walked into that Supermax and gotten her out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, he deletes the security footage, too. So, like, the plan of, you know, he won't delete the security footage. He won't think that far ahead. He thought that far. He figured
Yeah, he is far cleverer and creepier than we thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think he's about as creepy as we were expecting at this point.
That's true. There's very little he can do to be even creepier. He's kind of hit that creep factor to a insane degree.
He's awful. He's awful, awful, awful. Capital A, awful. But it's just a cool scene, and like with Clark Peters, who plays Lester Freeman on The Wire / Oscar Clemens here, just in the background where he doesn't have a gun on anybody or anything like that, and he's kind of just frozen in place watching it. And he had just seen Jessica's feat of strength. He'd seen her crush the chair and lift the table, and that was already intense. And now he is seeing this person who's capable of mind control. So he's seeing a lot. And if he were to retain this information, he could be a great ally moving forward. But he's cracking up at the end of the scene as well, just with everybody else in the precinct. So you got to
one big practical joke, guys.
Right. So you got to imagine that he is, you know, he's now, you know, his memory isn't wiped, but I don't know what use he's going to be moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. I hope that he becomes more use. Again, every time Lester Freeman shows up, I'm very excited for it. But we'll see. I mean, it seems that Jessica's moved away from that area now and is an entirely different area.
Right, right. Yeah, she leaves. She goes elsewhere. She finds the present that Kilgrave had left for her. It's her diary from 96 to 99, I think.
Creepiness.
I know, which has all sorts of great, like, goth illustrations in there.
Right? Can we talk about how, like, yeah, oh, goth that. Jessica Jones?
Yeah, it was great. I loved that. I thought that was a great touch. But yeah, she's gonna go because he says, like, I'll see you at home. So she pieces together what he's done. You know, she knows which home he's talking about, and it's Birch Street and Higgins Lane or whatever the heck it's called. Higgins Drive, I think.
Higgins Drive.
So she's going to go there, not before having this scene with Robin, which you touched on this earlier. At least you have that scene with Robin later in the episode between her and Jessica. And I thought this was a good scene. I liked how we get the description of Reuben, that he loves the zoo and he loves the giraffes with their long necks. And I thought that was an interesting kind of nod to Kristen Ritter, who sort of has a longish neck. I don't mean that as an insult. I think it's just an observation. So I feel like there's something there in terms of, like, connecting the two. I like how, you know, she talks about how he won't eat the crusts on sandwiches if they have seeds on it. And I like how she breaks down when Jessica says he's never coming back. And
yeah, it's brutal, man. It's brutal. It's such a heartbreaking scene to me.
Yeah. So I thought, and how she's, like, begging Jessica to find Reuben. I have money. Please, you're a private investigator. So I thought this was really good. This was tonally consistent of, you know, a little bit of her weirdness, but not contrasted with so much humor in the scene.
Right. That's why I think, you know, like I said, I'm glad they had this scene, which is what makes, if they had this scene, why that scene earlier. But again, I feel like that scene earlier really was for the audience and not the story.
Yeah. So I think that this was by far and away the better scene of the two Robin scenes of the episode. And to the point that I think that this was a great scene. I really, really liked this. But yeah, we get Jessica. She goes back to her place. She sees a little bit of a flashback unfolding in front of her eyes with Trish Walker's mom and Trish Walker. And this is after the accident that left Jessica orphaned and presumably left her with superpowers, whether or not they had manifested at that point. I assume she's 14 or 15 because that is the last notch, on the door frame to measure her height. So that seems to be about the same age as the young Jessica Jones actress we're seeing here. And Trish Walker's got bruises and marks on her body, so you know that the mom is just up to no good.
Yep.
So that's difficult. That's why I feel like, you know, you don't cast that array of like a young actor, a young Jessica Jones, a young Trish Walker, and Rebecca De Mornay as the mom, unless we're going to see a little bit more of that. And just in the way that we've seen the flashbacks to the night that Luke Cage's wife died, I feel like we might see more with young Jessica and young Trish and a younger version of Trish's mom.
Also, kudos on those casting choices, because they very much look like younger versions of those actresses.
It was great. Usually, or not usually, but oftentimes at least, that never, you know, that doesn't go well. You know, you don't cast somebody who looks like, you know, an older Kristen Ritter. Like, it doesn't work out very often, but they really nailed it this time. I thought that the kid acting was good. Top notch.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't remember how we felt about young Matt Murdock during Daredevil. Can you think that far back?
Yeah, no, he was good. I mean, it's...
I think we liked him, right?
Yeah, no, I liked him. It, as far as, like, the casting, I think it definitely looked like someone who could grow up to be Charlie Cox, but to be fair, most of his face was covered by the glasses.
Right.
So it's hard to tell. Also, Charlie Cox is just ripped, so,
got it.
You know, any kid they cast, it's not that they're going to cast, like, a ripped kid.
Right, yeah. I'm thoroughly illed out by Kilgrave, but I did love David Tennant coming out of the house wearing, like, his deep V-neck.
Right, yeah.
it's like his neighborly shirt. I thought was kind of funny.
It's funny, because, like, yeah, it's like... Every time you know, he used to be not on the screen that much, and now, like, every time I see him, there's just sparks of just, like, the Doctor, you know, like, when I see him and he does stuff, or how he looks, or what he, you know, just mannerisms. So it's really interesting, but he's still creepy as hell, obviously. Like, he still just has that, like, just creepy, creepy, creepiness. I think, actually, it was very, like, yeah, the deep V, like, oh, just look at him, just coming out here like a dad. But... yeah. I think that's actually kind of creepy, because he's coming out here like, welcome home, honey. And it's just like, oh, you're a madman. You're a lunatic.
Right. So he had earlier in the episode said, I'm not going to convince you. Like, I'm not going to use my power on you. I want you to choose me. I'm hoping you'll choose me like I've chosen you. And I believe you will figure out the same thing that I did, which is we're inevitable. And when she said, like, well, you could take me right now. And he's like, no, I can't. We're not at that point. Do you feel like in this moment he's thinking that he has Jessica, or do you think that he just has a curious Jessica right now? Do you think that he is foolish enough to believe that Jessica has come around, or do you think that he thinks that Jessica is still motivated to at least pursue this further, and he is going to, you know, take this opportunity to try and continue to woo her? You know, where do you think he is on this?
I think it's the latter. I think that this guy, I mean, from the pictures to this, I think he has a plan and steps in his mind, and in his mind, these are just gentle steps forward to achieving that plan and goal. So I do not think he's just like, I did it, yay.
Right.
I think he's very much just like, you know, like, ah, check this off the list.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah, I feel like that's exactly what his mental state is as far as this goes. And it's funny because it really, you know, we talked about last episode with the house, you kind of, you know, put forward this idea where it's just like, I don't even need my powers to, you know, torture you or whatever. But it's almost him saying, like, I don't even need my powers to break you down and convince you to do what I want.
Right.
That is exactly what it feels like, too, because it's like he didn't use his power to convince her to come, but he manipulated the situation,
right,
just being him, to make it happen. So I think there's a lot of levels here for this guy and his creepy awfulness.
So what do you think we're getting in the next episode? Episode 8, aka WWJD, What Would Jessica Do? I assume, unless this is going to be a deeply religious episode. What do you think we're going to get with this one? Is it going to be Jessica and Kilgrave playing house? How long are we going to be spending?
I was
Jessica
just
going
to say, I hope they just, like, they almost start off the episode in a, like, just a, like, actual, like, Leave It to Beaver style, like, oh, welcome home, honey, or some... I know they won't, but that's because that's a ridiculous thing to do. But I do feel like the next episode might have a lot of them playing house, as you put it.
All right. So we'll see what happens with that one. That's going to do it for this one, unless you think that there's anything we didn't touch on.
No, I think we hit on everything that I wanted to talk about for this one. I kind of did my rants about, like, you know, her plan, but we kind of agreed, like, I think that's a character thing and not a story thing, so I definitely agree with you there.
But I can see your point, too, how that can be frustrating to sit through.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a length of time thing. Oh, there is one thing I did like, because, you know, there's that line where about burning down bridges, and you've got to learn to swim or fly. And I'm like, is that foreshadowing? Because we know that, like, you know, she technically has that ability in the comics.
To fly, yeah.
Yeah, she's just jumpy right now. So I kind of like that they did that, like, you got to learn to swim, to pause, or fly. And the fact that she can fly in the comics makes me wonder, like, oh, was that just, you know, was that foreshadowing? Because she's clearly burning down bridges. And that's, I don't, cool, think Jessica likes swimming.
That could be like, the equivalent of when Daredevil has the costume at the end. Like, that could be, maybe she could fly at the end of the series or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, God, they're going to Smallville it. Oh, boy.
I think that they're past Smallville-ing it. I think that we're in full-blown Jessica Jones, and it's great.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not Smallville-ing it, because anything that Smallville is, it is making a mistake.
Right. Oh, God. Let's not start that. I'm sure that there's some Smallville lovers out there. All right. Let's wrap it up. All right. Hashtag, I feel like, Top Chef Perverts.
Yep.
That feels easy. So hashtag Top Chef Perverts. Top Chef returning December 2nd. Potentially some podcast action happening on Rob Has a Podcast over there at some point during the Top Chef season, so keep an ear out for that. Follow Kevin on Twitter at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. We'll be back with another episode of the Jessica Jones Podcast coming your way in just one day on Wednesday, December 2nd. That will be episode 8, aka WWJD. What would Josh do? He would podcast about Jessica Jones. Bye.
Bye.